Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Support for this podcast is provided by Subchuck Law. Revolution Recap thanks Subchuck Law for their support of our show, local independent media, and their mission of bringing unbiased truth. Revolution Recap would also like to thank Six Point Builders for their support. Six Point Builders are builders of fine custom homes in the Boston metropolitan area. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Revolution Recap. The Revs made it back-to-back wins last night with a commanding 3-1 win over Orlando City in the pouring rain. Ima Boateng opened the scoring. Gustavo Bo scored his first goal since March, and Carlos Hill put the game away with his team-leading 7th goal. The Revs are now 6-0-3 at home, tying the record for longest home unbeaten streak in franchise history with 9 games. They tie the 2005 and 2015 teams, which also had a 6-0-3 record. I'm Greg Johnstone. Joining me today from the Blazing Musket is Seth McComber. Seth, how are you doing?
Yeah, so happy to be here. It was my Father's Day gift to be able to talk to you, so definitely going to be a worthwhile podcast, I believe.
I think this is our first Father's Day podcast, or Father's Day week podcast, where we're both people on the show are fathers. So happy Father's Day to you, Seth.
Oh, thank you so much.
Happy Father's Day to Sean, who I know is on vacation this week. And also happy Father's Day to Chris, no longer in the show, but still in our hearts. I know he's having a wonderful Father's Day, I believe. I talked to him earlier today. I think he's going to the zoo with the kids. So, and also happy Father's Day to all of our wonderful listeners out there. And Seth, you want to start with a dad joke?
A dad joke? You're putting me on the spot.
No, I was going to say, I got a dad joke.
Oh, okay, go ahead. You go ahead.
Josie Altidore, more like Josie Out the Door.
Ooh.
We didn't get to talk about Josie in the midweek episode because I posted it literally 10 minutes before The Athletic broke that news. I'm sure a lot of people who listen to our midweek podcast were really confused on why I said the biggest news of the week is signing a 15-year-old left back when they were right after they read about Josie Altidore being released. We'll get to Josie right after I tell you about BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all of your championship finals, infos, stats, news, and scores. Get the latest odds and lines and the latest matchup reports from this year's NBA and Stanley Cup finals. Love the Vegas Golden Knights, by the way. As you know, I hate the Florida Panthers. Complete jabroni franchise. Bet the house on Las Vegas. BetOnline is your sports intel headquarters this season as we have you covered for all of your insider sports wagering needs from basketball, hockey, to MLB, UFC, and boxing. And of course, Major League Soccer. The fastest and easiest way to get your betting info, including live betting options and your favorite casino and card games available to play right from your home. Get into the action today. Head to the website or use your mobile device to join and be sure to use our promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, to receive your 50% bonus on your first deposit. That is promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, to receive your 50% bonus on your first deposit. Bet online where the game starts. Josie Altidore bought out. I believe this is the first time the Revs have used that buyout, which is essentially a unilateral cut a check, send a player away. Previous players like Butner, Somi, Mafla, mutual termination. It seemed like both team and player agreed on some sort of they terminated the contract mutually, and that has less salary cap ramifications. So this is a really big move for the Revs. It seems like pretty unprecedented, especially with the amount of salary left on his contract. Seth, what were your thoughts on the Josie buyout?
Yeah, it makes sense to me. You know, obviously, there's a lot of resources tied up into Josie Altidore, and I asked last night if the reason why they do this one-time buyout was to open up resources, and Bruce Arena said, yeah, that's it. Like, we're opening up resources for this summer. Obviously, they have 3 designated players right now. Josie Altidore was a max TAM contract. So all of a sudden, you have the U22 initiative slot that maybe they want to use this summer because of Dylan Brough's season-ending injury. You open up some cap space. You open up some money. I think that when you look at this Revolution team, there are deficiencies in some places, and that's a common thing in Major League Soccer, right? Like, it's very rare that a team has like starting quality, high quality in every single position, let alone depth beyond that. And that's what the Revolution are dealing with right now, because Dylan Barrero is out and he would be a go-to starter. And you have Henry Kessler, who is still missing time, coming off his crutches this past week. But obviously we're talking about, you know, August being a time that maybe he's catching up to speed. So, you know, the Revolution has spots that they are potentially going to need to fill. For me, and this is something that I've said pretty consistently, you look at the Revolution front line and they need an aerial threat, in my opinion. That when it almost goes half the season until a player scores with his head and not being Bobby Wood, that's a little bit of a problem, because when you play against the Revolution, you sometimes bunker a little bit. And we saw that last night with Orlando. And the best way to counter a bunkering team is sending crosses, corner kicks, set pieces. So I think that that's another area that they could potentially add a piece. So Chelsea Altidore just wasn't working. I believe he made 27 appearances for the New England Revolution over the course of the last 2 years. Only two goals. He went on that half-season loan to Puebla, had two goals there. He got his opportunities this year, and it just wasn't working out. So I think it made sense to move on from him and to open up some cap space.
You know, we talked about the salary cap and the numbers, and that episode is a couple of weeks ago. I wish I had the exact date on it, but I believe it's the salary cap discussion is four episodes now. If you haven't listened to it, I highly recommend it. I kind of explain all the roster rules if you want to do a deep dive here, but basically, the Athletic confirmed in their report to Jozy Altidore that the buyout, that Jozy Altidore is making over $1.5 million from the Revs. It seemed like the Revs have a high cap commitment there, and I speculated that on that podcast too. You have to assume that they're getting probably half of that money back for their cap. You can use the buyout. It has it removes that cap liability. So since we're about halfway through the season, you have to assume they're getting at least $750,000 in cap space, TAM, GAM, whatever you want to call it. So I know we got a question from Porter on Discord about what do the Revolution have. And I know I said in that salary data discussion that the Revs are probably up against the cap. They're probably going to have to move on from at least one player to find some space. And Jozy Altidore, who has a massive roadblock of $1.5 million between salary cap, general allocation money, and targeted allocation money, and some sort of combination of those, he was the very obvious choice to get rid of, and it opens up a pretty big amount of money for the Revs to make some moves. Still doesn't open up a designated player spot, doesn't open up a U22 spot, although they could use a U22 spot if they want, but they do have some, probably around $750,000. That's an estimate on my end. I'm guesstimating here, but they probably have at least $750,000 to work with, which is going to make them very active in, at the very least, the Major League Soccer trade market. But we certainly could see some international signings as well. I do have a question here too, though, Seth, before we get on. Randy LH says, who do we bring in to replace Jozy? Hopefully a winger, in my opinion, but I could see the need for a high caliber left or right back. What do you think the Revs do with that cap space opened up by Jozy?
I don't think it'll be a high quality left or right back, because I think DeJuan Jones and Brandon Bye are very good in those positions when they're healthy. I think if either one of those individuals went down with a long-term injury, we saw Brandon Bye come back last night. He did leave at halftime with some muscle tightness. I saw him in the locker room. He looks fine. That doesn't really say much necessarily, but I'm not really concerned that that's long-term per se, more of a precautionary thing in the rain and, you know, working that player back. But my point is, with those individuals, those are starter quality players. And to have multiple starters in a position like that is just not really like Major League Soccer. You're more likely to have depth pieces there that come in and you know, give you some minutes, like a McCoon or a Ben Sweat potentially, or Ryan Spalding. So I wouldn't necessarily add a left or right back. I think winger makes the most sense, because that's where Dylan Barrero played. I think if you add a winger, you're kind of thinking about how do the Revolution want to play in this situation. And Hayden Byrne of Boston.com, he mentioned that we saw Ima Boateng last night, usually a winger, actually play a little inside a little bit at times. And that maybe you bring in a winger that can also play on side in that diamond situation. But we go back to Tejon Buchanan, and they had to play that wide diamond. There was a lot of criticism about how they play in that formation. So I think if you bring in a winger, there then becomes a question of, do you play a wide diamond? Do you play a flat four in the midfield? Do you take off a striker? And I don't think Bruce Arena likes to do that. Bruce Arena is someone who usually likes to play two strikers on the field. So I'm not opposed at all to bringing in a winger. I think it makes a lot of sense. But again, I go back to the idea of bringing in a prototypical number nine, to bring in an aerial threat, to bring in a player like Adam Buksa. I think that the team would really benefit from that. I like Bobby Wood. I mean, Bobby Wood has been amazing in terms of his press. He's been a really he has a lot of goals this year. He has 6 goals, I believe, on the year. He has exceeded expectations as far as a lot of people when he comes into this. But I think that if you can bring in a 6'2" type of striker to pair with Gustavo Bow, or if, you know, Gustavo Bow does go down with an injury, now you pair him with Bobby Wood or Giacomo Veroni. I know that this team has a lot of strikers, but I think that would be something of an asset for them, if possible. Tommy McNamara was in the locker room as well. I know some people talked about a midfielder. He appeared in practice this past week. I think if you get Tommy McNamara back, then all of a sudden that position has a little bit more depth. You're not as worried about it. So winger makes the most sense to me. Striker is another one that I think is very high on my list. And I guess if you're really worried about Henry Kessler coming back, it wouldn't be a bad idea to add a starting quality center back. But again, that you find yourself in a situation that you have Romney, a definite starter. You have Farrell, who can be a starter. Kessler can be a starter. And then you bring in another center back to be a starter. That's a lot of resources in a position when you only can play two of them.
Yeah, and I think you've covered it pretty well. I think a winger is the absolute correct call. I think this team is missing something after the Dylan Barrero injury. Ima Boateng has done great, but you mentioned I don't know if the diamond suits him. He certainly played it very well yesterday. He certainly exceeded my expectations in terms of taking over a 90-minute job. Scored yesterday from the middle of the field, too, by the way, off that deflected shot from Bobby Wood. So I think Ima Boateng has done well, but is that going to hold up? You mentioned Bobby Wood. Is his production going to hold up? And then I think at some point you're going to want to play with two very good wingers up and down the pitch. And you have Ima Boateng on the left, but who do you have on the right? And I don't know if you want to put Gustavo Bow out there. I don't know if you want to put Latif Blessing out there. I think you want someone who can attack from either the left or the right side and carry the ball up the field. So I think a winger is going to be the primary objective. I should have done some research into some MLS wingers that might be available, because I think the trade market, if I am guessing what Bruce Arena is going to do, I think he's going to be active in the trade market like he was last year, where we saw 3 or 4 moves right before the summer window closed. I could see some trades coming more so when it opens as opposed to when it closed. I would look towards MLS moves first before international moves, because I don't know how big of a splash you can make with the international window unless they have someone in mind. But by the way, Nacho Heal, I believe, has returned to the United States. So I know that everything has kind of been negative on his timeline. Maybe we see him get back into rehab. Maybe we can get him, I don't know, a little bit after League's Cup, maybe. I don't know exactly what his timeline is. It's all mum on that point, but yeah, he's back in the States, which is...
Yeah, can I jump in for a second? Nacho here is back, and they're working on a plan to get him up to full speed, but he's in the United States. But here's my question. If you bring in a winger, what does that midfield look like? Because you're not taking out Matt Polster, probably, right? You're not taking out Carlos Heal. Noel Buck is a in-pen starter for me. You have Latif Blessing, who was brought in. He's a TAM player. He played well at stretches for this team, but also at times he's kind of struggled a little bit. And then you also have, you know, Ima Boateng, who has been very good, but, you know, obviously a lot of people talk about how he might be better off the bench. So if you bring in another winger, what does that midfield look like? Like, who are you moving to the bench, especially if you're going to play a two-striker system?
Yeah, well, I think that might be, you might play a one-striker system. You might go with Gustavo Bow up top, or Bobby Wood or Vrioni, depending on who's in form. And I think you put Ima Boateng on the left and you go back to the 4-2-3-1, you put the new winger on the right. I think adding a winger, though, gives you a lot more creativity and a lot more options. Whereas right now, playing the diamond, there's going to be some teams where you're going to get overrun in the midfield. And it didn't really work out that way last night, because I think Orlando was a weaker team. I think the press really worked with the Revs. I think the weather kind of bothered Orlando a little bit, too. So I think the way the Revs played with the press, with Polster and Buck you know, intercepting some balls in the attacking half. Because Savo got involved in the press too. I think everything kind of worked out there. But there's going to be teams that are superior that are going to be able to just move the ball through the midfield if you get caught up in the press. And so I think there's going to be times where a diamond or you mentioned the issues in 2021 with the wide diamond. You know, there's going to be teams that when they have possession, they're able to move the ball across midfield. I don't think you would really want to play that style, and you might want to revert back to a 4-2-3-1 and add a body to the midfield.
Yeah, I think that all makes sense. I think that what's tough is that we haven't seen the Revolution stick with a formation. So it becomes really difficult to think about what do they need. Honestly, like I think a 5-man back line could work for this team. You know, you play a 5-3-2, and you get two strikers out there, and you really utilize the attacking ability of Juwan Jones and Brandon Bae. But I don't think they necessarily go that way because there are so many talented midfielders there. In the same way that if you do go with a single striker setup, then all of a sudden you're moving, you know, Bobby Wood to the bench, who's so instrumental in your press, or you're moving Gustavo Boe to the bench, who is so important because his ability to shoot from anywhere on the field. And then you still have, you know, the question of Veroni and how do you potentially get him minutes because he looked a little bit better last night. So I think it's really hard for me to say, like, hey, they definitely need this piece because I don't know how this team is going to play because we've seen them use so many different formations, which to be fair is kind of a strength. If they can play a variety of different ways going into the playoffs, maybe that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Sunday Afternoon Fullbacks, by the way, says biggest position of need headed into the summer. Are we saying a winger or do you have another nomination?
Yeah, again, I go back to it's either a winger or it's a prototypical number 9, 6'2" striker who could head the ball into the back of the net.
And Porter also asks us, is Josie the worst signing of the rebrand era of the Revolution? I'm going to rename this the Arena era because he says May 2019 to now, which is when Bruce Arena took over. I will say not only is this the worst signing, was Josie the worst signing of the Arena era, I think you can make a really strong argument he's the worst signing in Revolution history, considering the Revs had a championship window and his contract was a major roadblock to a lot, and he really gave you no production. I think there are some other nominations. Kouassi was a designated player who maybe at that time the Revs weren't spending a lot, so maybe you could say a designated player at that time was a real bust. You have the Mancien and Dielna signings. Mancien was the highest paid defender in the league when he first came over. Outside of that, I'm running out of names that might be comparable to Josie, but I think Josie is probably the worst signing in Revolution history, and I'm not sure who you'd even make an argument for otherwise. Seth, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it just didn't work out, right? I mean, there's not many metrics you can look at to be like, hey, like, he was good. Like, he didn't contribute a lot of minutes. You know, his last goal that he scored was basically a whiff where it hit another body part and went to the back of the net. It didn't work out in this situation. I do go back to, you know, last year, Sam Minton and Tom Quinlan talked to Josie Altidore in the locker room, and he basically said that the running gun system, the free flowing system, was kind of difficult for him to translate to. You know, so maybe there was a situation where tactically it was difficult for him to figure out what the team wanted. If you're kind of being optimistic. I know he was a really good locker room guy. I talked to him, you know, a few weeks ago, and he was awesome to speak to. Talked about being a leader, mentoring players. I talked to Omar Gonzalez last night, who's a friend and, you know, now a former teammate, multiple different teams with Josie Altidore, and talked about how he's a great vibes guy. He really did great things for the locker room. He's going to miss him. The locker room's going to miss him. And he ended by saying, like, you know, I wish Josie the best. He'll land on his feet because he's the type of person that he is. Always does well in life. You know, there are reports out there, The Athletic, saying that there's Greek teams that are interested in him. I was able to report that there are Turkish teams that are interested in him. So, you know, at 33 years old, maybe he's able to find the right system and the right fit for him. But, like, in terms of signing him, you know, like, he was a big contract. You know, brought in probably to replace Adam Buksa. I think that was the idea, and that fell short. So you named some players in Revolution history that did not work out, that commanded high money. I think another one to consider is Pepe Moreno. You know, he was, you know, touted as being the true number 9 this team needed. Didn't want to come for a long time. Came, I believe he scored in his home debut, and then, you know, less than 10 games later, he was out the door and left. So that one's a little bit of a worse signing for a different reason, but I think you did a pretty exhaustive list in regards to the options out there for bad signings for the Revs.
I did ask Sean because he is the MLS 1.0 expert more than me. He also has Jerry Benson on his list. And then Mamadou Diallo, although he says they traded him and moved on from him pretty fast. But he apparently was supposed to be the striker of the 2002 team. And he didn't work out, and some rookie named Taylor Twellman filled in for him. That's how I'm interpreting this text from Sean. So if that's wrong, I'm reading it wrong. But yeah, those are some good shouts. But I think Josie, just because it's in the middle of a championship window, I mean, if he worked out, I think the 2022 season is completely different, and the Revs don't need to go spend a DP spot on Vrioni. They don't have to. It's a completely different timeline. And, you know, maybe Champions League goes a lot better for the Revs. Maybe the 2022 playoffs, they make the playoffs. They kind of hold their form as they did from 2021. I think the Josie signing had some major, major consequences in a very, very negative way for a team that had championship aspirations.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I will quickly defend Jerry Benson for a minute. I think that, you know, when Jerry Benson came here, it didn't work out, obviously. But when he left, he scored so many goals for his national team, for other clubs. And I think it was at the time, it seemed like a smart signing. But for whatever reason, he just couldn't get the mojo here in New England. I believe there was some family stuff that he was dealing with, obviously a language barrier. So, yeah, I think it's a little bit harsh to name him as one of the worst signings of all time, because I think the idea was right. I think the player was good. It just did not work out in New England for some reason.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think worst signing. I think we have to say worst signing. Certainly in the worst signing in the arena era. I don't even know what would come second in the arena era. Probably Bootner. I think you can really look through the 26-year history of the Revolution, and Josie Altidore stands out as just one that did not work and was a complete flop in every way. So, by the way, James Downing, do you actually believe Josie has links to Greek and Turkish big clubs? Is it agent nonsense? Seth, do you believe your report?
Yeah, so I think when you look at you have to remember that Josie Altidore is basically already getting paid for the next 2 years. So Josie Altidore doesn't have to have a big contract. Any contract that he gets right now is extra money, you know? So I think that there are teams that are inquiring, no question, about Josie Altidore, whether it's because of, his name, because of what he's done in the past, because of the fact that he's an American. Like, there are people that are willing to work with Josie Altidore because you can sign him for $100,000 and that's a lower contract for a guy who has proven that he can score goals. So I think that there's interest. I think there'll be interest within MLS. In the end, it's a question of, like, you know, is it worth it for those teams? Like, do they actually think that he can be a guy who comes off the bench and scores a goal, or a guy who can give you start spots? That's what the teams have to analyze. But I highly believe that teams are at least inquiring about this player.
Mm-hmm. And I think you deal with that. His salary demands probably are lower because he's still collecting a check from Toronto and he's still collecting a check from the Revolution. It's also worth noting that if a Major League Soccer team signed him to, say, a $100,000 contract, I believe that reduces the amount the Revs have to pay him. It's kind of similar to Ben Sweat, where the Revs signed him to a minimum salary and essentially they're just paying him the same. You know, they're just paying that burden from Sporting Kansas City. So I think it is in Josie's best interest to move on from Major League Soccer, because if he stays within Major League Soccer, he's still getting paid from his Major League Soccer contract. Whereas if he goes abroad, he's getting his Major League Soccer contract plus the Greek or Turkish or whatever contract as well. So essentially he'll be paid by another team if he moves abroad. So I could certainly see him moving abroad for a year or two and then maybe coming back. You know, if he has a resurgence, maybe he tries to make it again in Major League Soccer when that Revolution contract runs out. But I don't know. I certainly think he's not going to be playing in a major league. Greece and Turkey, honestly, to me, that seems to be the level I would kind of expect him to go to, if I'm being completely honest with you. So, hey, Seth, we're 20 minutes into this podcast. We haven't talked about the riveting 3-1 Revolution win. What's your key takeaway from last night's win? And by the way, our key takeaways are brought to you by The Rebellion. Go to nerebellion.org to learn more about them and their organization and how you can get involved in supporter culture. Seth, what's your key takeaway?
Yeah, last week I highlighted Carlos Hill because I feel like he had a really good game, obviously, involved in every single one of the Revs' goals. But I also think that he's a player that we take for granted sometimes. When you look at Carlos Hill, we're sometimes mad, that fans are sometimes mad when he doesn't get on the score sheet or he only has like three big chances created, because we hold that player to such a high standard. And I remember seeing earlier this year, there was some people kind of saying like, oh, like he's not playing as well. Carlos Hill is always at a high level, you know, like does he dip a little bit? Sure. But that's like the nature of soccer, but he's so good that I wanted to highlight him last week. This week, I want to highlight Dave Romney. Like he's been a really steadfast defender since coming into this league. And, you know, I'm at Gillette Stadium up in the press box, and I just focused on how often is he covering? How often is he engaged in the play? He really doesn't make mental lapses. When you look at his stats from last night, 90 minutes played, 90% passing accuracy with 60 attempts, 72 touches on the ball, 7-9 on long balls, 3-3 on tackles won, 6 clearances, 12 recoveries, 3-4 on ground duels. He's just been such a good player for this Revolution team. And I remember when I reported that he was coming to New England, I was like, this is a big deal. Like, I know he's not a big name. I know he's not a big foreign signing, but he's a well-known player that Bruce Arena, that Kurt Onofo knows. He was a LA Galaxy 2 player that went to LA Galaxy 1, and he was someone that Bruce Arena wanted for a long time. And I just think that we have to recognize that he does the job every single week, and I just want to highlight that he's an important asset to this team. I think that earlier this year, I was trying to push a little bit to make him an all-star. I think that that's a tough ask because the Revolution kind of declined and had that dip, and there are so many good center backs in this league. But even if he's not an all-star, I think it's really important to recognize that Dave Romney, a left-footed center back, has been a very good player for this team.
It's also worth noting he's now rotating center back partners. He had Henry Kessler at the beginning of the year. That was a phenomenal pairing. He's had Andrew Farrell back there as well, and that has worked for the most part. It's certainly been a step down from Henry Kessler. I think there's been a pretty clear decline in quality between Kessler and Farrell. And he's also played with Omar Gonzalez, and Omar Gonzalez and Dave Romney held their own yesterday. And I think we've had a lot of questions in the past about Omar Gonzalez, especially in a four-man back line. And we got some questions about Omar later, and we'll talk about that later. But it just seems like Dave Romney has a veteran presence, and he makes his teammates better. And compared to 2022 and 2021, and I mean, really, as long as we've been doing this podcast, center back pairings and back lines just always have seemed at times leaky and kind of a mess, and conceding penalties and conceding corner kicks and all that. And we really haven't talked about the back line this year. We really have not talked about the center back pairings, and for the most part. And a lot of that has to do with Dave Romney. We don't talk about Dave Romney a lot, and for a center back, that's really good. He's sturdy. He's solid. There's really not much you can say. It's pretty boring to talk about Dave Romney because he's just so solid, and there's nothing controversial to talk about. So he's the center back we've been waiting years and years for. So, I'm pretty excited about that. I'll just do the... We have all three designated players on the field takeaway, and it kind of worked out. The third goal, Vrioni to Heel to Ubo, led to a very nice goal to put the game away. Vrioni made a nice run into the box that opened up space for Carlos Heel to take that shot to the far post. I believe Dewan Season on Twitter sent me this stat a few weeks ago. I believe going into this game, they had played 26 minutes together this season, which is concerning. Obviously, with the injuries to Bo and Vrioni, going back to when Vrioni was signed, the three of them have not played together very well. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself here in saying that all three of them, you need to play all three of them. And these three played so amazing because it was a 15-minute cameo. But it certainly seemed like Vrioni is getting a little better, is getting a little smarter with his runs. And I think the fact that we saw all three of them out there and it led to a goal to put the game away is very encouraging. And hopefully we have health from all three of those guys. And it's an effective trio going forward. I'm not sure when Vrioni displaces Bobby Wood. I still feel like that has to happen. Bobby Wood is playing fine. I know he did not score yesterday, but he's got 6 goals on the season. That's second on the team. He did score, but it was called offsides on Brandon Bai. He did have a nice finish. It was just didn't count. And I believe that's also his second goal this season that's been taken off from an offside. So due to some offsides, I think he could be
eighth in goal scoring this year, but sorry, he could have 8 goals and lead the team in goal scoring if it weren't for those 2 offsides calls. But Bobby Wood has been pretty solid. We've talked about him a little bit, and you mentioned too, do the Revs go out and get another number 9? I'm not really sure what Vrioni's future is, but certainly a step in the right direction for Vrioni yesterday in that 15 minutes appearance. I certainly think it was a much better substitute appearance from him yesterday than what we've seen in the past, where he just kind of runs around and doesn't really touch the ball. So encouraging. Something to watch. I'm curious to see if Bruce tries to get the 3 designated players on the field more next week. Maybe Bobby Wood comes off at the 60th minute instead of the 75th minute. But I'm curious to see how this unfolds and if we get to see more designated players on the field, because we really haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I really like that goal, and I highlighted it on Twitter last night. It kind of played to a lot of the players' strengths, right? Like Vrioni comes in, grabs the ball, and then is able to face the opponent's goal. And that's where we've seen him most dangerous. Oftentimes a little bit higher up the field, trying to make runs in behind. But we have seen him try to like receive the ball earlier and then turn around and then start running at defenders. And as he does that, we see Gustavo Bowe start to drift wide, try to make that defender make a choice. Are you going to come with me? Are you going to cover the central space? And he's really good at riding that offside line. Sometimes he's not. I think we remember some games where he might have like 4 or 5 offside calls. But right now, Bo is in form. Bo is looking really good. So he's able to wire that offside line really well last night. And then from there, he gets the ball over to Carlos Gil. And Carlos Gil cuts over to his left foot and scores a beautiful goal. And I asked Carlos Gil last night, like, you're scoring a lot of goals this year. He has 7 goals on the season, ties his mark from last year. He's probably going to surpass the 10 that he had. I believe his first year was when he had the 10 goals. And I asked him, are you practicing shooting more? Are you trying to shoot more? And he said, yeah, that's something that I'm trying to improve, because a lot of the opponents believe that I'm going to make a pass and they're able to defend accordingly. But if I'm able to put myself in good spots and shoot, well, now I'm become a little bit more of a dynamic attacker in that sense. And I'm paraphrasing the quote. He didn't say exactly all those words. But basically the idea is that opponents were adjusting to him because they knew him as the guy who passes. But if he's the guy who passes in shooting, he becomes a little bit more dynamic and a little bit more difficult to track. So I think that I agree with everything that you said. We don't know Vrioni, and I've done videos about this. I'm not sure he's a terrible player. You know, like there are people that like get this guy out, buy him out. I think there's skills there. I mean, obviously, if you led a league in goals, there's something there. There's just a question of like, how do you fit all those pieces together? And when Bobby Wood is leading the press, when Bobby Wood is scoring goals, it becomes difficult to get a player like Giacomo Vrioni onto the field. But the more that you see him improve, and that's what Carlos Gil said last night, that he's improving every week, that he's still a young player, the more that he improves and understands the system, I think that's a real positive for the New England Revolution. And then if that does happen, the request to bring in a prototypical number 9 maybe goes down a little bit, right? They're like, hey, we have maybe we don't have that aerial threat, or maybe Vrioni turns into that aerial threat. But what we do have are 3-4 attacking players that can do so much on the field that they can break down teams in other ways.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I just wanted to mention one thing about Carlos Gil, just because we don't appreciate him enough. I know we've talked about that a little bit. And this includes hockey assists, secondary assists. So I'm going off of the Major League Soccer stats. I know some people don't count hockey assists at all, but after last night's game, Carlos Gil has 7 goals and 8 assists in 1,269 minutes. So that's 15 goal contributions in his almost 1,300 minutes played. He has 17 games played, 14 games started. Last year, he had 7 goals and 14 assists in about 2,900 minutes. That's 21 goal contributions. He had 4 goals, 18 assists in his MVP season, which was 2,300 minutes. And then in 2019, he missed most of 2020. In 2019, 10 goals, 14 assists in about 3,000 minutes. So goal contributions, 21, 22, and 24 in his 3 full seasons. He's at 15 right now. He might set his career high in MLS goal contributions, as well as breaking his own record for his personal best in goals with 10. I assume he's going to pass that 10. So he's playing very well. He's playing differently. As you mentioned, he is shooting more. It reminds me of when he first came to the league in 2019, where he was taking a lot more shots. It seems like in the past few years, especially when he had Adam Bukes on the team, he was looking to pass. He was looking to cross. And now it seems like he has a lot more, I don't know if it's confidence, or the understanding he's got to be more of a goal scorer because that aerial threat is no longer there. But he's really stepped up, and I mean, he's playing phenomenal right now. I assume he's going to be an MLS All-Star. I don't know if he's going to be a starter because there are some really, really good players right now in the attacking midfield that I think are going to get a ton of votes. But Carlos Gil, this seems like a very obvious All-Star season for him. I think if the Revs finish top of the table in the Eastern Conference, I think he's in the MVP conversation. I don't think he's an MVP, but he's had a little bit of, I don't want to say a resurgence because he's always been good, but I don't think people understand how good of a season Carlos Gil is having.
Yeah, I totally agree with all that. And I think that, again, we've become numb to how good he is. I mean, we're talking about times that he has 9 chances created, right? There are games where he has 9-10 chances created, but that's not the reality of soccer, right? Like, 2 or 3 chances created, and people have to finish those opportunities. And I think now that he's also a scoring threat, that's huge, especially because I wrote an article about this. You know, let's say Messi does come to Gillette Stadium next year. You're going to have, you know, whether he plays or not, you're probably gonna have a big crowd. Like if you say Messi's potentially going to play, huge crowd, and they show up to that game and they see Carlos Gil, like, I think that's a player you fall in love with. Like, he's so good. If you're a soccer fan and you see him, you're like, well, I'll come back next week. Like, he's making people look foolish. He's scoring goals. He's creating opportunities. So it's a player that if you watch the Revs every single week, you probably hold him to a higher standard than you need to sometimes, because he is that good. Like, he should be creating opportunities, but he's not going to create 9 every single week. That's just not a reality in soccer.
Before we get any further, I wanted to tell you about our friends Golazo Kits. Golazo Kits' mission is to bring unique vintage jerseys to your home with a catalog of jerseys, jackets, scarves, and more from clubs and national teams from over 80 countries in the world. They have United States men's national team merch. Maybe you're riding that high of Greg Berhalter returning to the national team. Well, you can go get some national team merch at golazokits.com and show off your national pride. They have Revs merch. They have merch from your favorite European club that you support from afar. Golazo Kits will have something you want and need in your closet. And if you're not sure of what you want, you can check out their mystery kit packages where you can enter in the size and style of jersey that you like, and Golazo will surprise you with the kit of your dreams. So go check out golazokits.com today for their full selection, and make sure you follow them at Golazo Kits on Twitter and Golazo Kits on Instagram. They have updates on their new inventory every single week, new unboxing videos every single week, so you'll be the first to know when they have something new in their store. And please use promo code REVSRECAP to save 15% off your order. That is promo code REVSRECAP at golazokits.com for 15% off your order for everything in the store at golazokits.com. Links and code are in the show notes. Seth, let's get to some listener questions here. And we kind of touched on the 3 designated players, Bobby Wood. Bobby Wood game yesterday, I mentioned the goal that came back due to an offsides call. But overall, statistically, not a great game from Bobby Wood yesterday. Eddie says, after a bad game from Bobby Wood, how good the 3 designated players look together, who would you want to see next game, next week against Toronto at home? Do you think Bobby Wood might be riding the bench and they give Rioni a shot? Or do you think that they keep Bobby Wood out there for another game?
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
imagine they keep with Bobby Wood, in my opinion. I think that his press is so important. Last time that the Revs played Toronto, he created that goal very early on. He does a lot of the dirty work. And I think, Greg, I think you covered it well, is that he potentially could have scored a goal last night. He was there for Ima's goal. He made that run in that led to the deflection or save from the goalkeeper that led to Ima's goal. So, yeah, I think just, if you look at the stats, maybe he didn't do that well. Like, he didn't put up the numbers you'd want to see. But I think that there are good things that he did last night to create opportunities. And that's not a knock on Veroni. Again, I've been saying that I just don't know what to think of this player. And I really do wish I got more minutes and more game tape to understand who Veroni is as a player. But I think that Wood really hasn't done anything yet, in my opinion, to take him out of the starting lineup. So I imagine he starts and Greg, like you said, maybe he just comes off in like the 60th minute, maybe even earlier, 55th minute, because you want to try to get Veroni onto the field. But that'd be my take.
I also think League's Cup gives this team a very interesting possibility or a chance to give Veroni starts and not screw up the season. You know what I mean? You don't want to really screw up the momentum of Bobby Wood right now, because he's been playing fine. He's been consistent for this team. He's doing really well. He's got a lot of confidence. Really, the only time yesterday that I thought he kind of screwed up was there was a pass from Gustavo Bo, and Wood was making a really, really good cut, but the ball was a little bit behind him, and he didn't really get his body around the ball, and he ends up shooting into the side net. But still a good run from Bobby Wood. He's still getting in positions to score. The goal from Ima Boateng, I believe Bo led him kind of to the right side of the box. He took a nice shot on target, which forced a save, and then Ima Boateng cleaned up the mess. Wood, even though statistically he didn't have a great game, if you look at his box score, I think FootMob has him as a 6.6 rating. I don't have his stats in front of me, but I think he's still quality. There's still some positive signs there, and I don't think you want to really mess with that momentum. So I think we're going to see Bobby Wood starting through League's Cup, and then I think because League's Cup is kind of this new competition, and I just don't picture Bruce Arena feeling all gung-ho about it, I could see maybe Wood and Veroni or Bo and Veroni kind of playing there a little bit. I think they might rest Bo a little bit for that competition. And so maybe we see Wood and Veroni in as the striker pairing in that game. But I think Bobby Wood, for right now, they're riding the hot hand. If Bobby Wood goes 3 or 4 games scoreless, though, then I think we have this conversation. Cody Hall, by the way, says, do you think the DP combo to score the last goal will be enough for Bruce to give them a chance to gel, or are we just silly gooses? As I said, I think we're going to get maybe 30 minutes of Veroni next week. But after a strong win, Bruce Arena doesn't like to change a whole lot, so I wouldn't be surprised to see the exact same lineup or a similar lineup and a similar tactics. And maybe Veroni just gets 30 minutes as opposed to 15 minutes. So Steve McGrogan says, Omar had another solid game. When do we stop having the reaction, the negative reaction, when he comes on? Seth, are we too harsh on Omar?
Yeah, I mean, I think last year was tough. Like, he had some bad mistakes. And I talked to AJ De La Garza at the end of the season. Beginning of this season, about last season. And what De La Garza said is that we kind of forget the mental part of soccer, you know? And just like when we talk about momentum, that things are going well and they're going to keep going well, when things start going badly, you start to question yourself. And he's talking about himself, saying like, hey, you start to say, do I still have it? You start to get nervous about when you have the ball and what you're going to do with it next. And he talked about last year that they actually brought in a sports psychologist to have meetings with people. And that's something that's still available to players this year. And I think we forget that, you know, that when you have a few bad touches and a few bad games, it creeps into your mind a little bit, especially if you're an older player, or even if you're a younger player, you start to question yourself and your ability. And then all of a sudden you overcompensate, or you don't play the game that you have. And he mentioned, and I mentioned in the interview, Omar Gonzalez, and he said, you know what, one thing people don't recognize about Omar Gonzalez is that he is an absolute professional. He treats his body well. He comes to practice. He's a good teammate. He does all the things that you want to see in a player. And I asked that to Omar last night in the locker room, and he said, I just come in and try to give myself 1% better, get myself 1% better every single day. That's the mentality that I have, whether it's about being on the field, being a mentor, those are the things that I want to do. I think, you know, last year was a tough season, and obviously fans started to kind of get uncertain when he went onto the field, but he's been better this year, right? Like, I think we saw during the Open Cup that he was steady for those 90 minutes. Yeah, maybe he made a mistake or two, but they weren't as bad as we saw last year. And he joked, though, last night, you know, coming on at halftime, that after the game, there were still conversations about, like, we'll look at tape and we'll get you better and things like that. I think Sam Minta will have an article about that, but saying that Bruce Arena still kind of holds him to those high standards, even though he knows him for so long and he's a veteran, he's still trying to get that 1% better out of him. So I feel more comfortable now than I did last year with Omar Gonzalez. I still think that he's a third center back. But last night I thought he did just fine.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't want to tack on too much of what you said, but I do want to just give a lot of kudos to Omar Gonzalez too, because we hear little bits and pieces, and I don't think it really sticks with the general public, and it certainly doesn't stick in my mind, but there's some recency bias here in my mind because I just read about it. But we hear all the time that Omar Gonzalez is great with working with the kids and the youth players. And I've heard that before, and Caleb Pongratz of Pro Soccer wrote an article. He interviewed Santiago Suarez, who, like Peyton Miller, who I talked about in the midweek podcast this week, is going to be promoted to the senior team this year. And he and Santiago Suarez mentioned Omar Gonzalez as someone who had a very good influence on him. So Omar Gonzalez, I think we all kind of have as a joke or as a meme of, oh no, here comes Omar. There has been, even at his low points with the Revolution on the field, I've heard that off the field, he's had a really positive effect as a teammate and as a leader. And so I think it's worth just kind of mentioning that he has a very good locker room presence. And I'm sure some people will give me crap about doing the nice guy routine, but it does have a positive impact in the locker room. And I think this season he has turned it around. He's looked pretty solid. I had concerns about this game, him coming into this game. I thought that this game, it seemed like Orlando was just trying to outrun the center backs. And this seemed like a game where Omar might get burned a little bit. I think that goal that the Revs scored allowed them to play a little more conservatively and not be so subject to counterattacks like we saw in the first half. But I thought Omar held his own, played pretty well. And yeah, I mean, that one goal he had nothing to do with, really. That was Noel Buck that got beaten on the aerial play. So I really have no complaints about Omar Gonzalez's performance this year. And for the role he is in, he seems more than well suited for it. So for now, I think we can kill the Omar meme. I think it's Omar Gonzalez redemption season. Tim says, injuries, what happened with Brandon Bai and Bobby Wood? Implications going forward. Brandon Bai, correct me if I'm wrong, Brandon Bai came off with a muscle tightness. I believe that was what Bruce said in the press conference yesterday, Seth. Okay. Bobby Wood, I know, went down in the first half. It looked like he was limping a little bit, but I don't believe he was pulled because of injury. I don't think they said anything about that post game, correct?
Yeah, no, I have not heard anything about that. I just assumed he came off due to preference of the coach, and Bruce Arena, and no one asked about that after the game.
I forgot about the he was limping a little bit in the first half, but he came back out for the second half, and he played to a point where he typically would play until, which is about the 75th minute. So I think Bobby Wood will be fine. Brandon Bai, obviously coming off at halftime in his first game back, is concerning. Curious to see where we go from here with Brandon Bai, if they rest him and maybe make him available on the bench. But obviously you don't like to see that first half. Also want to point out, and not to, you know, beat a dead horse here, but I did find it interesting that they moved Andrew Farrell out to right back. We got a question here about that. Tyler O'Brien, thoughts on the decision to play Farrell at right back for the second half? We obviously know he can play here, but it's still quite unexpected. He's played there a few times, especially in Brandon Bai's absence. Joshua Bulma was available for this game, not used today. They went with Omar Gonzalez and moved Andrew Farrell over to the right, which worked fine. But I think that's pretty damning on Joshua Bulma that he's not being used as the backup right back, which seems to be his role in this team. Instead, they're going to go to Omar Gonzalez and shift Andrew Farrell out there. So if anything, Joshua Bulma is third or fourth, if you include DeJuan Jones, on the right back depth chart. I thought Farrell played fine, though, in the second half as right back, and he seemed to hold his own. So those are more or less my thoughts on Andrew Farrell at right back. Seth, anything to add there?
Yeah, I would just say that obviously he came into the league as a right back, and Bruce Arena mentioned that there are times that he practices as a right back. So it's not like this is just completely random. Like, the team is aware that he can play right back, and obviously Omar Gonzalez is a former national team player, someone that Bruce Arena knows well. So he says, this is the look that I want to go with. in the second half.
Tim, who asked about Bayon Wood injuries, he also says Bo looked like his old self. And he also says, how does the 4-4-2 affect Buck? I feel like he wasn't quite as impactful in the diamond as he is when he sits back next to Polster. Despite that, the Revs looked great overall. I think yesterday in the game, too, they really made an emphasis to press in the first half. And Buck and Polster are really great at that. They have really, really good instincts. They make really good decisions on when to tackle, when to press, when to apply pressure. Buck, overall, is just... I know you tweeted out a few clips, Seth. The complete package, in my opinion, of just for an 18-year-old kid, the mental awareness, the ability to jump up when needed. He's strong going into tackles. He's a physical player. I mean, he can pass the ball. He can shoot the ball. He had a rip that just went wide of the post yesterday. He has great ball control. I don't need to really go on, but I could. Just the complete package. And so, anyway... This isn't involved in the question, just some more Noel Buck love. But I thought the 4-4-2 yesterday, I kind of disagree with his comment. I thought it worked out fine for Buck and Polster because they were able to get up in the press and they were able to kind of play to their strengths, which was to take the ball in the attacking half.
Yeah, I think that Buck can play in the 4-4-2, especially if it's a diamond, because in that situation, it's very narrow and you're able to get up the field and control the center of the field by pressing someone. You're also able to come back and cover for a player. So he's not taking guys on 1v1 on the flank. It's more about finding out your positioning. It was interesting. I was talking to Hayden Bird, again, at Boston.com, up in the press box. And I did send out a bunch of clips kind of saying, like, man, Noel Buck is just so good. He's a good player. And at one point, Hayden was saying, like, he's kind of having an okay game. And I was like, I thought he was having a good game. And him making that comment allowed me to kind of look back and think, I'm like, you're right. Like, he did miss a tackle right here. He did cause a foul right here. He obviously missed on the header that Orlando scored on. And after the game, he kind of said, I think I did fine. I don't think it was my best game. But, like, for me, he had 2 weeks off, you know? Like, he had a little bit of a calf injury. He was working his way back from that. He had prom, he had graduation. I don't think those things were distractions at all for him. I think that he is, even though he's 18 years old, I think that he's a smart and dedicated kid. But I think it's more about that calf injury and coming back from that and playing in soggy, wet conditions and trying to get to the flow of the game again. So I don't think it was a bad game at all from him. Like I said, I went into it being like, man, this is a good game. We saw a lot of his strengths. But I think that he has more to offer than he did last night. And I don't think it has to do with the formation. I just think it has to do with, like, getting into the rhythm of things. You know, in a week or two, I imagine he's a little bit sharper and a little bit better. But again, I highly impressed by him as an individual. I think he's going to do great things. Taylor Twellman was talking about how he has a future in the Premier League. You know, we've heard about training stints with Tottenham that didn't come through. Other teams potentially looking at him. Last night I did ask him about, you know, potentially playing for England, because Taylor Twellman said that he was someone that was potentially going to get a U18 call up, but the calf injury, you know, kind of complicated things. And he even said, though, he wasn't sure if he was going to go up regardless. And he said that his international future is up to the air. And he kind of said, I hope fans don't hate me for that. Cause I think that this is an individual 18 years old. He's still getting better. He's still working hard, but I think there's so much potential to do great things at the club and international level. So hopefully everything comes good for him, because he is a really good individual, a good player. And if you want to read his exact quotes, check out the Blazing Musket. That article was posted Sunday morning.
And you should be subscribed to the Blazing Musket. There are free and paid subscriberships. All articles go straight to your email inbox, so it's the easiest way ever to get Revolution News. So please go subscribe to the Blazing Musket today. By the way, Bruce Arena was asked about Noel Buck. Solid job. I think early in the game he had a little bit of a tough time, but he got back into it. He played solid. Missed the marking on Duncan McGuire. I'm paraphrasing here. Missed marking the 13, Duncan McGuire, for the goal. But overall, a really good performance by Noel. So, but it is interesting. I'm going to have to pay attention to when they play in a 4-2-3-1 versus the diamond and see if there's a difference in Noel Buck performances. Because maybe I'm looking at this through rose-colored glasses. And by the way, I'm going to have to send an email to American Soccer Analytics and ask them to do an in-depth article on if there is a trend with players slumping right after prom. just to see if that might have an effect on Noel Buck's performance yesterday. So Steve McGrogan says, Revs use a good offense and their defense. Are they finally listening to me? Do we continue to see that going forward? It is the version of the Revs that I want to see. I think we've seen it for a while. Even with some injuries, the Revs are playing well. They're scoring goals. This is a fun team to watch. They've really unlocked a lot of things offensively, and we talk about the injuries and kind of some players missing throughout the field. But both on both sides of the field, for the most part, they have been above average to good or great across the league. And a team like Orlando, you know, I saw a lot of people saying they're not a very good team. They're a mid-table Eastern Conference team, and they got played off the field by New England. So I think this is the team, right?
Yeah, well, keep in mind that Orlando was missing upwards of six or seven players, maybe even more, to be honest with you, because of international suspensions, the injuries, things like that. But yeah, I mean, last night's game could have easily been a 0-0 game. The conditions were horrible. Not many fans in the stands. And I don't blame them at all, by the way. I was talking to someone after the game, and I'm like, man, anyone that went to this game is a diehard fan. Like, that was absurd conditions to be in. And you had a team like Orlando who was just bunkering. Like, there were, before the first goal, I would look in the box and I'd be like, well, there's seven Orlando players in the box. And that game could have very easily ended 0-0, and Orlando would have been pumped to take a 0-0 draw. The Revs would have been like, ah, ho-hum, it's one of those types of games. But they came out and they scored three goals. They scored, Ima's blast was very good. Bo is a very good player who scored a great goal on his 100th appearance for the Revolution. And you look at the last goal, 3 DP score. So it was fun. And of course, you'd rather have a clean sheet. Of course, the Revolution want to have donuts this upcoming week. But if you did watch that game, if you did go out to the game, you got your money's worth. Like, the attack is there. And Greg, you nailed it. Like, I think the attack has always been there. It's just about, like, who's healthy and who's available. You know, like, I've been critical of Gustavo Bo since he's gotten here, because there's only certain ways that you can play him. He gets injured quite a bit, but there's no question that he's talented. Like, when he's on the field, like, you're going to see 4 or 5 shots per game, and one or two of those probably going to end up in the back of the net. Carlos Hill is an MVP caliber player out there. Ima Boateng is always been a good player, and the Revs are really lucky. Greg, you tweet this every single time. The Revs are really lucky that he took a pay cut to come back to New England. So I think that if the team is healthy, then they're really fun to watch, and it's just a question of what do they do to that summer transfer window.
Mm-hmm. We did get a question from James Downing. How did nobody else think Ima was worthy of a respectable salary in this league? I have no idea. And Sean and I talked about this. We were shocked that Bruce Arena declined his option. We thought, well, maybe Damian Rivera is going to replace Ima. They played Ima less, and they're playing Rivera more. But, you know, with Barrera out, Ima's ahead of Damian Rivera, and for good reason. I'm not really sure what the logic was, if it was a salary cap move in declining his option. And I'm not sure how everyone else in the league dropped the ball in signing Ima Boateng. He wasn't commanding TAM money. We're talking about $200,000 for a backup winger who is pretty electrifying off the bench. I mean, that's the value you wanted at. Everyone in Major League Soccer was asleep at the wheel there, and it seemed very obvious. And the Revs, I mean, I guess we can credit Bruce Arena for reading the market, but I think you can also say he ran a major risk letting go of a really strong bench piece. Very lucky to be able to re-sign him. I don't know if there's much more I can say to that, but yeah, crazy.
Yeah, no idea. And I just want to add one more element is, like, Ima Boateng is one of the best guys to have in the locker room. Like, he's just so funny, and he's great every time he talks to the media. Last night I was talking to Noah Buck, and I asked, there's an article going to be out coming about prom and you know, just being a normal teenager, some quotes about that. And I asked him, like, is it weird to, like, hang out with your friends? Like, do your friends look at you as, like, Noel Buck, the, you know, professional soccer player? Do they view you as, like, a normal dude that they hung out with since, you know, elementary school or whatever? And, you know, Noel gave me an answer, but Ima Boateng was right next to him, the locker room next to him. He goes, they see him as superstar Noel Buck. And he's trying to make, like, a little bit of a joke about, like, yeah, he's a superstar, he's a hero. So he pumps guys up, he makes jokes. I don't get it. I mean, you know, I think that this is an example of why it's great to have Bruce Arena as your head coach and sporting director, because he has those relationships. And I'm not sure if Ima Boateng goes back to a team and takes a pay cut. But he did that for Bruce Arena because he believes in him as a coach. He believes him as a person that trusts him. So I think that that's a compliment in some ways to Bruce Arena. Maybe it's a risky play, like you said, but like he obviously really enjoys playing for Bruce Arena.
Kay Cutting says, how did the Revs become the fourth highest scoring team in the league? Which we kind of touched on a little bit. He also says, should the Revs continue with the high press? It worked well tonight. Seth, any thoughts there?
Yeah, I think that especially if you have Bobby Wood, the high press is a really effective tool. I mean, there are two goals that I can think of off the top of my head that were created directly based off Bobby Wood not giving up on a play over the course of the season. And that's pretty absurd to think about, that like literally your center striker kind of doing a solo mission helped create at least two goals this year. So I think that the high press continues, and I think that it's just a testament that the Revolution have good players. They just need to stay healthy. And if they do, they have a good attack.
Mm-hmm. And on that note too, Randy LH says, is it me or has Polster looked much better in the last two games? And I think too, this is a game that's really suited the Revs press. And Polster, like I mentioned with Buck earlier, his game is really suited to getting up, pressing, pushing into the attacking half. I feel like games where he's weaker, because I've been hot and cold on him all season, are games where you have a team that is has a really dynamic attack and you have to kind of sit back and maybe you need an additional body in the midfield the Revs just don't have. So I think this game really suited Polster very well. And I've been hot and cold on him all season, but I think this was one of his better performances too.
Yeah, I think that Polster and Buck have a good relationship. They cover each other really well. And I think that the Revs sometimes have a hard time when teams play really direct. We saw that with Philadelphia Union. We saw that with Inter Miami, like longer balls. They don't really want to play out. And I think that that's difficult for like the back line and Polster sometimes to deal with. But yeah, I thought Polster had a good game. And I think that relationship with Buck is a big part of it.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Sorry, he said look better in the last two games. That's what Randy's question was. And I bet he has a good game next week against Toronto. I could see the press working in that game at home as well. Josh Goulet says, can you speak to Earl Edwards Jr.? I was impressed overall, and I'm curious what you all thought. Thank you. And John Stafford, by the way, chimed in. He said, probably his best game I've ever seen from him. If he played consistently like this last year, maybe no Petrovic. So I think he's saying a solid player, but probably not Petrovic. I obviously highlighted by the 63rd minute save, a strong left-handed save, which I believe at the time it was 1-0. I'd have to go back and check, but kept the Revs ahead in at that time. Certainly a veteran goalkeeper. I would have liked to have seen Jacob Jackson. I said that in the midweek episode. I would have liked to have seen what we could see from him. But Earl Edwards Jr. has proven to be a very capable backup that the Revs, I think, are lucky to have. And it was, you know, we get on Bruce Arena for bad signings. We talked about Jozy Altidore a lot. But he has nailed some depth signings, and Earl Edwards Jr., I think, was one of them. Strong game from him last night. Any thoughts on Earl Edwards Jr.?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. And I think that he's someone that's a good locker room presence as well. That save was really outstanding. And he's someone who's really supportive of his back line and really helpful to him. I like his comment. Omar coming in wasn't an issue for him because Omar and him often play together as reserves during practice. So they were able to communicate and help each other out. But I think you nailed it. That save really was stellar. And it really is something that he could probably cherish and hold on to as he prepares for potentially another start at some point this year or future years.
Got a question from France. I think we're going international here, Seth. Max from France says, even if he is already 30 years old, Carlos Heel has clearly played to a level, clearly has the level to play in Europe. Are you afraid big clubs will open their eyes and try to get him? I wasn't before this question, but obviously if he's making a name for himself in France, certainly I think there's interest in Carlos Heel. I haven't heard anything about him. And truth be told, I don't think he is someone that I'm worried about the Revs selling, because at his age, I don't think the Revs are going to get an offer that is high enough for them to sell the centerpiece of their team. Whereas Petrovic or Noro Buck, since they are young, they're going to get offers of, you know, hopefully 10 million, 12 million, whatever. I don't know if Carlos Hill is getting a $10 million offer abroad. So I think he's more valuable to the team than what his market value is right now. And I'd also say because he's a designated player, the Revs can kind of pay him whatever he wants. There's no issue with when his contract comes up. If, you know, for Tejon Buchanan, for example, you know, when his contract came up, the Revs would have to give him a major, major raise. And then the cap implications are very, very different. I know that's a Major League Soccer thing and not a problem with the rest of the world in other leagues. But with Carlos Hill, since his contract's coming up in 2024, if he wants to stay and the Revs want him to stay, they could pay him above his worth. And it's still fine. They have the money to do that. They're making so much money on transfers, they can overpay their designated players if they want him to stay. So unless Carlos Hill wants to leave, I think the Revolution have a lot of motivation to keep him. But as I say, I wasn't expecting, are you worried about Carlos Hill question to leave and question. And now that I've gotten one, I'm a little concerned. Seth, what do you think? Do you think Carlos Hill might be interested in trying his hand at Europe again?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on his personal life and his family life. And maybe the money part as well. But if I'm the Revolution, I sign him for whatever he wants. You know, I think that he's such a huge piece to this team that if you lose Carlos Hill, you're automatically basically in a rebuilding year, right? I mean, I can't imagine them. They don't have any pieces internally that can fill in for Carlos Hill. And I can't imagine them being able to immediately find a piece that's a like for like player for Carlos Hill. Obviously, he got a green card in the offseason. And I think he likes living in Boston. I think as a team, if the team continues to be competitive and they continue to, you know, push for trophies, I can imagine Carlos Hill wanting to continue to play here. He has a kid here with his wife. You know, obviously friends here. Nacho Hill, his brother, is here. So I think that he learned English. I think that's a big thing that I think about sometimes with player. You know, Gustavo Bow, and that's not a criticism because I only know English and I can barely speak that well sometimes. But Gustavo Bow still doesn't know English, and he's been in the United States for many years now. Carlos Hill knows English and is able to speak to the media. That's a big deal, to speak to the media in English. So if I'm the Revolution, I just make sure that he's happy and that he wants to stay here, and you give him the money because he's going to be – if he's not officially now, and I'd probably argue that he is the best player in Revs history, he's definitely going to retire as the best player in Revs history because he's so technical and he's so influential.
The only thing I could picture is he has a very strong connection with Gustavo Bow, obviously. I wonder if Bow moves on, does he have less incentives to stay? His contract is up in 2024. I can't imagine he leaves before that, but I wonder how that plays out. And I wonder if the Revs open up extension talks in this offseason. James Downey, rock solid attendance tonight despite the weather. Is this a messy boost or what? Maybe it's a Nani boost? What do you think, Seth?
I mean, the announced attendance was somewhere around 24,000, I think. If you look in the stands, it was not that. But again, I give no criticism to the fans at all because those conditions were absolutely horrible. You know, I had to walk from my car to the stadium, and I got drenched, and my shoes were wet for the rest of the night. So yeah, the crowds have been huge recently. I think the fans really appreciate that. The players appreciate it. I think Bruce Arena appreciates it. But last night was a really tough ask for people on Father's Day weekend.
Lexi says, during the match, one of the commentators mentioned that if the United States men's national team goes through to the end of the Gold Cup, we might not see DeJuan Jones play in a Revs jersey until after League's Cup. And I believe the Gold Cup starts next week? Soon? It's soon, right? So we're losing DeJuan Jones soon. If that's the case, what changes would you make to strengthen our defense in his absence?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, you hope that Brandon Bye is ready to go, right? Like, you hope that any tightness is something minor. McCoon is coming back, so he's an option to play as a left back, and he's something that I think Bruce Arena has enjoyed playing him there and seeing him there. Obviously, Ben Sweat is a player who can play that position as well. You do wonder if they play Boateng there, right? There's a little bit more of a wing back type position. Maybe you could play him as a four-man back line that way and then just ask him to stay back a little bit more and play well defensively. I think Boateng has improved in that regard, his defensive contributions. Last year I was a little bit low on when he came on defensively. I thought offensively he was always amazing, but defensively he wasn't always as disciplined as he needed to be. This year I think he's improved in that way. Maybe you do go back to a five-man back line. So you play, whether it's Omar, whether it's McCoon, and then you play Ima as a left back. And then of course, there's always this question of like, Ryan Spaulding, what do you do with him? You know, like he's doing so well at Tampa Bay. Do you ask him to come back? In my opinion, I'd like to just let him be there. I think he's just absolutely killing it. So I imagine that he's having a lot of joy down there, and that's good for his development to continue to have those reps as opposed to going back and forth. I remember like Rochester Rhinos players kind of sometimes having a hard time like going back and forth in that sense. So yeah, I think that there are some options, but it's definitely going to be something that the Revolution are going to miss. And you're really going to hope that Brandon Bhai stays healthy and is able to contribute minutes.
Yeah, and one name you didn't mention, Ben Sweat. You wonder if Ben Sweat's going to get a run out there at some point, especially if Brandon Bhai's out. I know they might go to a five-man back line and play three center backs and then maybe use Ima and then someone else on the right. I'm not sure who, but you know, if McCoon is unavailable too, I know he's on international duty. I feel like you have to eventually just play Ben Sweat and sweat it out. No pun intended. Traeger also says, shout out to Dewan Jones for being called up to the United States men's national team. That being said, how do we replace his influence on the field for the next few games? It is worth noting that the Gold Cup starts on June 24th. So next weekend, the USA opens up against Jamaica at 9:30. So keep an eye out for that. John Stafford says, so at the beginning of the season, we were talking about how Ferrell and Ima Boateng was going to be on the bench, but it was good to have some depth. Fast forward, who is going to step up and become a regular second half of the season? So I believe he's talking about who's going to put themselves in the starting lineup. I think that's what he's saying. Or I'm not sure if he's saying who's going to be step up and be a regular depth piece. I'm not sure which one he's going for. Let's say regular depth piece. Do you have an idea of which depth piece is going to step up here for the remainder of the season?
I mean, I think it's guys coming back from injury are obvious choices. You know, Tommy McNamara is a player that we saw contribute a lot of minutes last year. He can play, you know, as a center midfielder. He can press up the field a little bit. And I think that that's something that the Revs have missed sometimes when guys are out injured. Like who is that defensive midfielder who can step in for Matt Polster or for Noel Bach or for Latif Blessing? You know, same thing with Nacho Hill. We saw some good things from Nacho Hill last year. If he comes back from his injury, is he able to contribute more minutes? You know, there's this question of Latif Blessing. He was out with a knock that he got in practice later on in the week. So, you know, like what's his role in the team? I think that you probably don't view him as a depth piece per se, because he's hypothetically as a starter as a Max Tam guy. Not Max Tam, but he's a Tam guy. You know, and I think if you're looking at a reserve who becomes a starter, Veroni's the obvious choice, and we talked about him earlier.
Yep. And Tommy McNamara too, I think you mentioned him. I expect him to have a good some good bench appearances coming off. I think he'll also be pretty important in giving Noel Bach and Polster some rests in the midfield when needed too. So a couple more comments here before we wrap up. Paulo says, another easy W against weak opposition. TFC could be the same next week. Cincy on July 1st will be a big clash. Looking forward to it. I think that is going to be a very, very telling game. And it's going to be interesting to see how the Revolution line up there. They'll certainly be without a handful of players. Obviously, we mentioned Dewan Jones. It's going to be interesting to see how they play on the back foot and not at home, pressing against a team, as you said, missing some players in the middle of the table. It's going to be interesting to see how we square up against the top team. And Skyman also says, y'all missed a heck of a Special Olympics unified match that had more than one worldie. There was a half volley, a chip, and almost a straight banger. So, yeah, I did see that game. They had the unified match yesterday. Obviously, a great event that the Revolution put on. So, Seth, that wraps us up. Any final thoughts here today before we conclude our show?
Yeah, I'll just say I kind of kicked myself a little bit because I meant to go out to Gillette Stadium after media availability to watch some of that game. And then I was, you know, so tired and totally spaced out. Got my car and then, you know, checked Twitter and saw the game was going on, because I would have loved to take some pictures. And, you know, shout out to Tommy McNamara and Andrew Farrell for, you know, going out there and supporting those individuals, those athletes. And I think shout out to the Revs for doing the Bowl for a Goal event. That seemed like a really cool event that happened recently. And I think that the charity work does not get recognized by this team sometimes. And the other thing I'll just say is, you know, hopefully you guys will subscribe to the Blazing Musket. Like Greg said earlier, we have those free memberships, but also the pay ones help us out a lot in terms of, you know, gas money, whatever else, you know, $5 a month. You know, last night we had two reporters that were down there, and we've already produced upwards of 5 or 6 articles from that last night. And that included, you know, talking to Bruce Arena about some things, speaking to Carlos Heel about some things. And then Sam and I had exclusive interviews. Like, we went over and spoke to Noel Buck and Omar Gonzalez. So there's so many people that are doing really great work for the Revolution B, obviously yourself and the rest of the guys at Revs Recap. Frank DeLapa at the Boston Globe is a legend. You know, the guys over at New England Soccer Weekly do great stuff every single week. So I just want to rec, you know, Caleb over at Prost. I mean, I could go on and on about the various. Andy does a really good job. You guys know all the people if you're on the hashtag, but make sure you just show those people love, like their stuff, comment on their stuff. And, you know, for us at the Blazing Musket, if you can subscribe and just do the free one and get in your email, that's awesome. And if you can pay the $5 a month, it's much appreciated. So thanks to anyone who listened to this. I mean, this is a long one, right? And thanks to anyone who subscribes to our work and retweets our work. It really means a lot.
We'll be at 1:15, which I think is kind of the upper end of our podcast. Sean does a lot better of keeping it to a nice tight hour. I ramble on a little bit. I apologize for that. We had to talk about Josie, though. Had to talk about Josie. One thing I'll add, though, too, Seth, is that the Blazing Musket does coverage of Hartford Athletic. I know they're having a tough season there, but Nate does an amazing job covering the team. He live tweets. He has game recaps. He does previews every single week. So if you're a Hartford fan, definitely make sure you are subscribed. There's not a lot of coverage of Hartford Athletic. The Blazing Musket already has at least one Rhode Island FC writer for next season, and they do updates on Rhode Island FC as they prepare for their inaugural season in 2024. And then also, Seth, you do midweek podcasts for this show. We would not be able to do 2 podcasts a week, which we've been doing for the past couple of months without your help. So your financial support of the Blazing Musket goes to not only just Revs coverage, but also Rhode Island coverage, Hartford coverage, and also some additional podcasts, which I think are currently lacking. Certainly there are a lot of other podcasts that cover the team, when we talk to people, they always want more coverage, and you've been doing a great job of that as well. So that does it for us. You can follow us on Twitter at Revolution Recap. You can follow our Revolution Recap Instagram and Facebook pages. And also make sure you're subscribed on iTunes or wherever you're listening. And if you could rate us and review us 5 stars, that would be very, very helpful, helping people find Revolution content. We will be back next week following Toronto FC. Until then, thank you everyone for listening. Go Revs, and happy Father's Day.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.